when we think about where we will probably actually deploy capital with this fund, I think it's much more likely to be around places where there's a more established sporting product, and where more it's, you know, helping to collaborate on commercialization and monetization rather than really like building and growing an audience for a new sport from scratch. So I think that's not because we don't believe there's good investment returns to be had around some of those opportunities, but much more because we want to have a really concentrated portfolio. Kara and I want to be really hands-on partners in the places where we make investments. And so with that kind of concentrated strategy, we don't really have room to take sort of full venture style risk in the way like an early stage venture fund could, and much more we're taking more growth equity like risk around more protected downside, but where we feel like there's still really substantial opportunities to drive, you know, 3, 5, or 10x returns.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Rohan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. We're continuing our themed approach to content, and I think we've been doing, well, I have at least found it super fun interviewing people from different areas. Last month was all about AI in sports, and we, not just Gen AI, we talked to a bunch of startups from motorsports, from injury prevention, from media management, all finding interesting ways that AI can be applied in sports. This month, we're going to be talking about sports tech of women's sports, and not just about having more women in sports tech, but actually finding solutions that help grow women's sports. And for that, to kind of kick us off on that series, I wanted to bring in somebody who will provide an investor perspective about what these kind of solutions can do and the scale they can achieve. And for that, who better to have than Jasmine Robinson from Monarch Collective. Welcome to the show, Jasmine.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited for the conversation.
And actually, that conversation I will not be leading, because I think a much better voice from SportsTechX is the head of our business development, Kimberly Fernandez, who is a voice that you haven't heard, but I hear a lot. And Kim, also with her background as a professional footballer, I thought was the perfect person to lead this episode. So now I will hand you over to the capable hands of Kim, who will lead the conversation with Jasmine. You might hear me piping in from time to time, but I will let the ladies take the lead.
Thanks, Sean. And hey, Jasmine, it's an absolute pleasure to host you on the podcast for my first ever podcast at SportsTechX, and the first of this month, which we're kicking off with Monarch Collective. So just to start things off, if you could like dive straight into letting us know a little bit about your journey in sport, with sport, and just what led you to the place you are in today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess my journey in sports, I mean, I've been a sports fan my entire life. I think that's because my dad played in the NFL. So I just kind of grew up in and around sports from the first moments I can remember. And so in my career, started my career in the management consulting space at Bain & Company, but was always looking for a way to get involved in sports. And so after a few years on the consulting side of things, ended up moving into a strategy role with the 49ers. That was really my first foray into sports. And really, it was one of the first sports teams with a sort of proper strategy department, really, really thinking about how you optimize and build a business, how you integrate technology into sports. And now I think that's a very, very common theme. And so it's fun to see the way the industry's evolved since my early days through to today. From there at the 49ers, I mean, spent a lot of time working across every single business vertical of the team, which was really, really fun. It was right as they were building their new stadium, Levi Stadium. So really fun experience. And around that time, also, they ended up spinning up a family office to start investing in sports-oriented opportunities. And so that was my first foray into investing. Ended up moving over to the investing side of things there and looking at everything from European football clubs to early-stage sports tech companies. So really a sort of a broad remit across the sports investment landscape. Ended up just really falling in love with investing. And so ended up leaving the 49ers, going to Stanford Business School, and then joining an investment fund called Causeway, which is where I spent the last 6 years or so, a growth stage fund all around investing in businesses in the sports ecosystem. So sports media, sports technology, sports operations, businesses like SeatGeek or Flow Sports, Quint Events that runs sort of VIP around sports. So lots of really fun business at the nexus of sort of sports and innovation. And through that time, I think we've just been really observing all the growth that was happening in women's sports. You know, clearly audiences are showing up globally, filling stadiums, showing up to watch events on TV. And clearly it was sort of happening in a repeated enough capacity that it felt like, you know, we've really hit this sort of mainstream moment around women's sports. And at the same time, I think you finally started seeing sort of media companies and brands and sponsors paying attention to women's sports. And so real sort of revenue flowing into the ecosystem. And so to me, with kind of those components in place, I was really surprised that there were so many billions of dollars being poured into investing in men's sports teams and leagues, but that no one was really paying attention to the women's sports side of things. And so decided to put together a fund to really focus explicitly on that and really sort of focused on that mandate, a first fund of its kind. And so ended up teaming up with Karen Nortman, who was one of the three co-founders of Angel City, who has obviously deep experience in the women's sports space, like myself, an investor and operator, to launch Monarch Collective, which is our $100 million fund to really invest across women's sports teams, leagues, and rights-based adjacencies.
That's quite incredible. I was reading a bit about like your story and a bit about Kara and how her investment in Angel City FE kind of grew into what today is Monarch Collective now. So can you also tell us a little bit more about the fund, about the initiative, what that sort of journey is going to look like for you now since you all have just announced the fund as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's an exciting week on that front because we're finally sort of wrapping up the fundraising phase of the fund. We'll close on Friday on a little bit over $100 million and really be sort of shifting our focus to actually deploying and investing funds. And really, we're focused around sort of three buckets of investment. So it's investing in teams, leagues, and then rights-based adjacencies. And so rights-based adjacencies for us are less so, you know, just tech companies that are serving the women's sports ecosystem, but more so where are there sort of substantial rights opportunities in the women's sports landscape, whether that's media rights or sports betting rights or things like that, where maybe the sort of current ecosystem dynamics aren't serving the commercialization of that element of the ecosystem well. And where we can really sort of partner with others and build businesses to scale and grow that segment of the ecosystem. And in terms of the sports that we're focused on, I'd say we're spending, you know, probably 60 or 80% of our time right now on the global football ecosystem. I'd say mostly focused in the US and then the UK and Europe is where we're sort of spending the most time today. But also spending a good bit of time looking around opportunities from in everything from basketball to golf to tennis to rugby, cycling, racing. So really sort of also thinking about sort of the broader remit of sports opportunities. And for us, what makes an investment a good fit are really those things that are in sort of more mature components of the market. So where there are sort of established teams and leagues that are driving real revenue from things like sponsorship and media rights already. But where growth capital can really help those businesses to scale and grow. And so that's really where we're focusing our time and attention.
That's quite exciting. And considering that the Women's World Cup is, you know, this month, how does that impact the fund and how does that impact just your decisions? I'm sure that's exciting. I mean, just exciting sport to look forward to, but everything around that, all of the ecosystem that sort of supports just women's football, right from the tech down to sponsorships. And what sort of implication does it have for Monarch Collective and for the companies you're looking out for as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's really exciting to have so many sort of tentpole events on the horizon around women's football and sort of football more generally. So, you know, World Cup, to your point, coming up, you know, it'll be really exciting to then have the World Cup in 2020, the Men's World Cup in 2026 in the U.S., to then, you know, fingers crossed, maybe get the Women's World Cup in the U.S. in 27 and then the L.A. 2028 Olympics. I think there's sort of lots of drumbeat moments around sort of U.S. soccer and football more globally coming up. And so, yeah, we think of all of those as sort of opportunities to, you know, raise the profile and awareness of, in particular, soccer in the U.S., where I feel like, you know, it is still sort of nascent and growing versus, you know, we're just catching on to what the rest of the world has known about how incredible that sport is. And so I think, you know, we see that being a real driver of fan base, of revenue monetization around not only the leagues in the U.S., but also, you know, the U.S. is a core market and consumer around international football properties as well. And so I think it's a really exciting time given some of those dynamics.
And I was reading an article where it mentioned that you said that investing models that are driven by joy can generate more powerfully than investing models driven by greed. And so with that in mind, what are the kind of companies and startups that you are looking for, and what can Monarch Collective do for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a pretty focused remit with where we're investing with this fund. So we'll be making only sort of 6 or 8 investments with this fund, so really concentrated portfolio. And really within that, we think about, you know, maybe that'll look something like 3 or 4 team level investments, 1 or 2 league level investments, and then 1 or 2 investments around sort of rights-based adjacencies. So we're not spending a ton of time looking at investments around sort of more technology-oriented companies that serve that component of the ecosystem, or really sort of looking at like startups per se. We're much more looking for those opportunities that are sort of sitting in this more scaled component of the market. I'd say maybe the one asterisk around that is that we are spending some time with groups that are looking at expansion teams, for example, in the NWSL or the WNBA, where we feel like there's sort of that established revenue dynamics and established league dynamics already, but where there's the opportunity to build and scale a team and stadium and practice facility from the start. So those kinds of opportunities are really interesting to us as well.
Just a quick follow-up on that, Jasmine. Would you also be looking at new sports, things like pickleball and paddle and the way they're growing, and maybe if they grow into the women's segment as well, is that of interest?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're definitely following and tracking all of that really closely. But when we think about where we will probably actually deploy capital with this fund, I think it's much more likely to be around places where there's a more established sporting product. And where more it's, you know, helping to collaborate on commercialization and monetization rather than really like building and growing an audience for a new sport from scratch. So I think that's not because we don't believe there's good investment returns to be had around some of those opportunities, but much more because we want to have a really concentrated portfolio. Kara and I want to be really hands-on partners in the places where we make investments. And so with that kind of concentrated strategy, we don't really have room to take sort of full venture style risk in the way like an early stage venture fund could, and much more we're taking more growth equity like risk around more protected downside, but where we feel like there's still really substantial opportunities to drive, you know, 3, 5, or 10 extra returns just because the audience and addressable market around women's sports is so intact today.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
What would you say are the most emerging trends in sports tech that you believe can help shape the future of women's sport in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's really fun and exciting about women's sports is that, you know, while these businesses are becoming more and more mature, you know, often doing 10, 20, 30 million a year in revenue, they aren't doing, you know, 100, 200 million in revenue. And some of that actually, I think, gives you a little bit more freedom. You know, if you're doing a few million dollars a year in sponsorship, you might be more apt to test new sponsorship models to see if there are new ways to build and monetize that audience. Or, you know, if you're not really monetizing your fan base as fully today, maybe there are rooms to use technology to build direct membership programs. You know, I think there are just lots of different ways that you can monetize within the sports ecosystem. And I think a lot of those will be driven by technology. And I think women's sports is really like the perfect place to test and grow. And I think some of the models that we build and develop in the women's sports ecosystem are going to be those that then move over and become impactful revenue drivers on the men's sports ecosystem as well. So I think about this a lot as the opportunity to be a little bit more creative, think about the really new sports fan that we're serving today, which is really sort of dramatically younger, more racially and ethnically diverse, more gender balanced sort of within the women's sports ecosystem, and think about like how do you actually serve that new consumer segment. And so really excited to think through where there are both operating models that are new and creative and different, but also where technology comes in.
Okay, so Jasmine, can you also tell us a little bit about how you think tech can help grow audiences for women's sport and how it can help further advance women's sport as well?
Yeah, I think that one of the interesting dynamics about the women's sports ecosystem is, you know, I think men's sports has sort of started moving along the evolution of integrating technology more into the business operations. I think on the women's sports side of things, because they're in some cases has been less capital sort of invested in those businesses, they've invested a little bit less around sort of what the technology stack looks like to sort of support and scale and grow the business. Not that they haven't done anything, but I think some of the, you know, if you look at sort of the spend of a men's sports team on technology versus a women's sports team on balance, women's teams are spending a little bit less. And so I think as revenue starts to scale, as growth capital and investment comes in, it's going to be really important to integrate technology in a lot of the ways that the men's sports ecosystem has already, which I think will be great for sports technology companies, you know, opening up the base of potential customers that can be served. But also there's going to be room for new technologies that really speak to this sort of differentiated consumer segment. I think what's really interesting and exciting about women's sports is, you know, if you look at who the fan base is, it's really, you know, 50-50 male, female, tends to be average age and sort of the low 30s versus on the men's sports side where it sort of tends to be in the late 50s. So it's a really different consumer and fan base. And so I think that means what fans will demand of technology to make their experience on game day, outside of game day, really great will be quite different. So I think it really opens up some new possibilities for sports tech startups to come in and really build products to help to serve this fan base.
Just to build on that, Jasmine, on one side, I think there is a key conversation around building an audience for women's sports. As you said, the audience is inherently younger, and I guess tech can play a big role in getting access to that audience. So from a women's sports team's perspective, I guess they would want to invest in media tech, which can help them, you know, take assets and take them to wider audiences or help get more data about their audiences. Like that will be, is that the highest priority item, I guess, from a tech perspective for a women's sports team?
Yeah, I mean, I think media technology is certainly a big one. And I think a lot of that investment may end up coming more at a league level in a lot of cases. And so thinking about like how should technology be integrated to offer sort of better direct consumer solutions around sort of media rights, I think is certainly a hot topic. But I also think that sort of the marketing tech stack is another area that, you know, that should be built into a little bit more deeply. I think, you know, we're seeing in teams that are actually spending around direct marketing to their fan base and really sort of actively sort of building and scaling that pipeline of fans for attending games. Because oftentimes these teams aren't selling to sort of sold out stadiums. There's really high ROI to building that audience and actually like bringing that group in. So I actually think like, if you think about just really focused near-term ROI, tools that really enable better direct paid marketing around getting people to show up in stadiums, to buy merchandise, things like that are actually another really interesting lever for value as well.
Lastly, just on the performance side, because this is something that Kim and I have spoken about a bit. We came across a solution, for example, which does shoes for women, which is EDA Sports. You might know them as well. Because a lot of women athletes currently are just using the solutions that are available for men, whether it's performance analytics metrics or managing their own bodies, their own health, their own fitness, and things like that. Is that in another area that let's say startups or investors can look at and take more seriously, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. I mean, I think it's sort of two different components. The first is there might be some sort of performance solutions. You know, you're giving the example of footwear. I think that's a good example where solutions that are purpose-built for women make a lot of sense and are really important to the ecosystem. I think the other side of it is that a lot of the sort of data tracking wearables kind of segment, probably the same solutions can be used around data capture. But then when you think about data analysis and what it actually tells you about steps to take around performance, really that sort of analysis and taking the perspective of female athletes, I think is going to be another important component of driving to the right sort of training programs, nutrition programs, sort of all these components that can really move performance forward.
Right. And just from the point of view of Mona Collective, can you also tell us a little bit more about what are your recent successes looking like as well?
Yeah, so we're in early days of the fund. So we'll be making our sort of first investment, I'd say, in the next couple of weeks. We'll be able to announce it publicly, which will be really exciting. It's one that we're super thrilled to be partnering with this ownership group in particular around a team. They're really, really incredible. So excited to be able to announce that here, hopefully soon. I think looking forward, we have a really incredible pipeline of opportunities that we're excited about investing in. I guess recent successes, since we're in such early days of the fund, I mean, I think one of the things that Kara and I have been really thrilled about is just the support we've gotten from really incredible limited partners. And as we've gone through the fundraising process, I think, you know, if we had been doing this fundraise 2 or 3 years ago, I think it would have been a lot more challenging. But today, people really see the opportunity around women's sports, really see it as an investable category. And so I'd say we were really thrilled by the number and sort of breadth of investors that, you know, heard the story and really sort of had high conviction around that this was a great place to invest. And we're really proud that as we built our limited partner base for our fund, we were able to build it from a really sort of diverse slate of investors. So diverse in terms of gender and race and sexual orientation and some of those components, but also a diversity of sort of skill sets and value add ways that our limited partners can show up. So a lot of operators from large tech companies, large media companies, folks that are athletes themselves, either are or were athletes themselves, people from policy and people from real estate. So really sort of this broad breadth of folks who actually want to engage with the work that we're doing. And so I think that's one of the things that the companies that we invest in will really find valuable is we have this really incredible network of people who are invested in this going well and who will really make their time available to help.
Right. So it's quite exciting to hear the incredible network of investors and advisors that Mona Collective has on board. And so what's the next few months looking like for the fund?
Yeah. So the next few months will really be about team building and about making some investments. So on the team building side of things, we'll be hiring sort of a couple new team members to join us who can really support the work that we'll do both around making new investments, but also because we intend to be really sort of hands-on operational partners with the companies that we invest in, folks who can really bring great expertise on helping to build and scale these businesses. And then on the investing front, I think we have a couple of really exciting opportunities in our pipeline right now that we're working actively on, both in terms of team level investments, league level investments, as well as some really interesting rights opportunities. So really, I think over the next course of the next couple of months, we'll be able to invest not only our first investment that's coming up here shortly, but also one or two other opportunities that we're working on. We'll hopefully get deals done and be able to talk about those as well, and also be able to sort of partner with those groups, which we're really excited about.
That's very exciting. And just on a completely different note, can you tell us a little bit about your favorite sporting moment?
Oh, gosh, that's a good one. My favorite sporting moment. I think I'd have to say, probably would have to go back to my 49ers days and, when we opened Levi's Stadium and being able to see sort of the first few events with live crowds and see all of the sort of small things that we'd been working on across concessions to ticketing to technology to fan experience and see all of that kind of come to life after sort of so many years of planning. I think that was a really incredible moment to see sort of the stadium filled up with fans for the first time. But honestly, there are so many. I was just out at an Angel City game this weekend. It was the Pride game, and that was just an incredible atmosphere, sold out crowd. So there have just been so many incredible sporting moments. I love going to live sporting events and just getting to see the way each sort of stadium and fan base and sport is really so different. But the sort of community ties that come along with sports is just always gives me so much energy and joy. So it's great.
Yeah, that's one of the main reasons we love ending a podcast with that question, because I'd like to believe that we're all sports fans first, which is why we choose to work in the industry that we do. And invariably, I've seen that it'll always bring a smile to our guest's face as well. Just as you answer that question, I could see Jasmine was beaming. Jasmine, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for making the time. And thank you, Kim, for doing a fantastic job hosting your first episode.
Yeah, thanks to both of you. So much fun having this conversation.
All right. And also a quick word then, in case our listeners have had maybe an abrupt gap or two. We had some technical issues recording this podcast. Mics and earphones were all over the place. But I think our editor will do his best to bring you a full good episode. That is a wrap for the first episode in our series of speaking with fantastic women and people who are bringing women's sports or bringing technology to help advance women's sports. We will continue the series for all of this month, and Kim will have more guests for you to listen to. We look forward to speaking to you soon. Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.